Hi, thanks for joining us on Hometown to Hollywood. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide. Today my guest on this podcast is Benjamin King. Benjamin has many film and TV credits, but he is best known for his role as Pete Rooney, the father in Livin' Maddie. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, I want to, you're the first adult actor, like adult, let's just say over the age of 25 maybe.
Is that what they call me now, an adult?
You're an adult actor.
Yeah.
Is that like, that just takes us down some terrible places.
Well, even though, just the idea that I'm an adult, you know, I still kind of, I guess, yeah, I'm used to
you're
being
married and you've got
adult.
Kids.
Yeah, I know I'm an adult. Sure.
And you played a dad on TV, I think.
Right,
that.
A few times. Yes.
Means you're an adult. But to be fair, I've interviewed quite a few young adult actors.
Yeah.
But this is really neat. You actually started acting. Your first credits are when you were still...
In college. Yeah, professionally, yeah. My first job was the summer of 1990. I was 18 years old, about to turn 19 in November, yeah.
That's amazing.
Centuries ago, it feels like.
And that was Saved by the Bell. That was a big show.
It was a really big show. I had never heard of it. The only TV I watched in college were like really sports or... I can't even really remember having much time to do much television watching besides, you know, yeah, hanging out with a group of guys and watching a sporting event or, you know. So I didn't, this was a Saturday morning show, so you add that in.
Oh, that's
you know,
right.
College kids, we slept in. There was no morning. Morning was, you know, 12:30.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware of the reach of Saved by the Bell, and I didn't know much about it. I didn't know any of the kids who were in it, and I'm friends with some now, and it's just, what an incredible feeling to be able to sort of jump into, like, this moving train, and just, and it was great, and people come up to me, so I think I'm on, like, my character was on the leaderboard of, like, top, like 50 or something guest stars, and it was like a special beach. They did a beach episode, a series of beach episodes, and I came in as like the fraternity boyfriend, and it was perfect. It was awesome. I loved it.
That's
great.
So cool. So your first guest star, you're 18. It's a pretty iconic show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back a tiny bit. When did you know you wanted to be an actor? Because you don't get a guest star role on an iconic show at 18 without starting a little bit before that.
Well, I didn't know for sure that I was going to give it a go professionally until I hit college and I was... So, let me just take it back a sec. I was in high school and I did theater at a very intensive theater program at Beverly Hills High School. We were, and still are, nationally renowned for public schools in any event, and... I did the three shows my senior year and two festivals. I was worked to the bone, and I wanted to get to college and start my life as something else, I think. And I took a law and society class. I figured I'd be a lawyer. My dad's a lawyer. And I fell asleep. I was so bored. I think, it was really mind-numbing, and... I rode my bike past the theater department. I saw sign-ups for an audition for a senior-directed one-act plays, and I got cast in the lead in one of the shows, and the rest is sort of history.
You know, you mentioned how hard you were worked in high school in the theater department, and people don't talk about that, but my experience is that a lot of the high school theater programs are incredibly demanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had... There was an actor... who was on a soap named John Engle. And John Engle, basically, before he sort of launched into a professional career, or maybe in the middle of his career, he taught at Beverly Hills High School for years and years and years, and developed this outstanding... Clearly, Beverly Hills High School is nestled in the middle of Beverly Hills, entertainment everywhere... And kids see their parents, you know, in this business, and they're either naturally gifted or want to participate. The way that I described our theater department was, for me at least, I was a football player, but I wasn't very good. I thought I was, but I couldn't take a hit, didn't like it, and played a little baseball, played a little volleyball, and I came to the theater department, and I felt like I was given like this great big hug, like welcome. Welcome to theater. Welcome to the theater department where we're all here, everyone's accepted, everyone's invited to help, and it just felt like the right place for me to be. And that was my sophomore year. I still played football the next year, but I knew that my heart was in theater, and I knew that that's where my friends were going to be. That's where I wanted to spend my time. And there were smiles, and there were different kinds of people all over the place. And for me, and for that department particularly, to get back to your initial comment, we worked our tails off, but we wanted to put on the best thing. We knew that there were going to be industry people there. I mean, there was just no question.
Yeah, that's not a normal audience situation for most high school theater companies.
No, we didn't know any different, but I remember very clearly playing Johnny Cassino in Greece, who sings at the high school, Born to Hand Jive, and I went and got headshots taken right after that. And I'm looking back at myself and going, what are you getting headshots for? My parents were like, listen, you can get headshots, but you're not working professionally until you graduate high school, at least. That was sort of very clear to me, and it's different for everyone, I understand. But for me personally, I knew, that if I was going to continue this sort of this new passion of mine, it was going to really start for me dollar wise sometime after I graduated high school. But when my first show that I ever did was at this camp back in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. I played Conrad Birdie in Bye Bye Birdie, and I was 10 years old, and I had the entire camp at my fingertips. The minute I walked on stage, I had my hair slicked back and I was dressed all cool, and I could hear the gasps from my friends, like, or laughter or whatever it was. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. I have everyone's attention.
You were 10?
I was 10.
And you played Conrad Birdie.
Well, each age group did a show and had, and didn't just do it. I mean, we were involved in all aspects of it. So this camp, and actually my kids now are going to be starting this camp this coming summer. And they had all sorts of activities, from gymnastics to basketball, tennis, all sorts of sports and crafts. But then there was like this like great, playhouse with a proscenium stage and green rooms. And I mean, like just an incredible experience. And I didn't know that I was going to be in a show. They're like, can you just sing Happy Birthday for me real quick? And I did. And they're like, all right, why don't you play Conrad Birdie? It was like that kind of a thing. But it was so cool. And I came home with like with the VHS to show my parents. They were so excited. And it was just, I actually have the DVD of it somewhere. We turned it into a digital thing. And that's really where it all started, way back when.
Theater camp, age 10. There's so many stories like this, and mm-hmm. so many people who are involved in the industry in one mm-hmm. way or the other. They have an experience where they join a theater, or they're in a theater camp, or they're on a film or TV set, and something sort of shifts, and it's that feeling that you describe where it's like, I feel like I'm home. Mm-hmm. These are my people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what leads you down the path.
And what's interesting is, as a parent for me, I see my girls, and I see that just the natural struggles of any, young girl who's trying to find their way socially. And they grew up on a soundstage, let's face it. And they're inclined towards theater. They're comfortable in front of people. They're comfortable, working with adults. They're little actresses. What can I say? And I'm not saying that that's what they're going to become in life. I kind of hope for them that they don't feel that that's the natural course because it's what their dad does. But I want them to feel that sense of belonging and acceptance that's just unconditional in the world of theater. It really is. It's a very unique experience. And one way or another, I look forward to my kids finding that kind of glory and acceptance in whatever they choose. But I have a feeling that theater is going to work for them. Yeah. Just knowing who they are and what they're driven towards.
Yeah, I've never found it to that degree anywhere else myself. Mm-hmm. Theater is just very special that way. Did you have somebody who inspired you as an actor?
The first person I can remember is my Uncle Jerry, my father's uncle. And he was an actor. And I'm not sure what kind of success he had when he was younger. I don't think it was something that, you know, catapulted him into financial comfort, well, let's say. But he was so funny. And he was so just cool. And he was all about art. And he just, he was so excited for me, I know, when I started. And I have this, like, this painting of that he made. I was the music man in my senior year, Harold Hill. And he painted, or he used markers, and he painted this kind of, congratulations, you're off to UC Santa Barbara, which is where I went to school and studied theater eventually after I fell asleep in that Law and Society class. And it was this great picture of me as Harold Hill holding the briefcase that Harold Hill held on that train at the very top of the show and wishing me luck. And it's just something that, you know, it's, in terms of an inspiration, that's hard to sort of pin down, but certainly he was the only one that I knew that I was related to that was an actor.
I think it helps to have somebody that you know in real life who is an actor, because it tells your whole being, this is possible.
Yeah.
This is real.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But even for me, it was less, I see what you're saying, but it was less about, well, this is possible, and more like, boy, I wish I was as funny as he was, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And every time I saw him, he would tell jokes, and I'm starting to remember them now, and I don't know that they're appropriate for your audience, but the first person who I knew believed in me as an actor was my high school drama teacher. His name was Dr. Bruce Hertford. And he's no longer around, but he believed in me kind of right away. And the Beverly Hills High School Performing Arts Department was very intense and not frightening is not the word, maybe intimidating. And I remember sitting the first rehearsal for Grease, which was the first thing that I was in the chorus, and then they moved me into this other role because someone else couldn't do it. And I just remember looking around at all these people, and I was like, "Whoa, they're just talking like normal people. They're not, as they're reading their scripts, they're not, doesn't seem like they're forcing anything." It just, you know, it was like, "Oh, okay." He believed in me, and he put me in this role. And then, you know, we cut to my senior year. He put me in the lead in all three shows. It was The Crucible, you know, John Proctor, and then it was Harold Hill, and then another director came in and put me in as Dr. Treves, I think, in Equus. I think that was his name. Treves, I'm not sure. But that was like the first person that was, hey, you're good at this. If you want, I think you can do this.
It's so important to have a mentor who believes in you. You know,
yeah.
You can do it without that, but with that, it's just so much better and easier.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Patty Duke came to one of our shows in The Crucible because her makeup artist was the mother of the girl who played the lead in The Crucible.
That's
Goody, not Goody Proctor, but I'm forgetting her name. But she was there, and she gave me this great big hug, and she said, "Oh my God, you're so great." And I reminded her of that when we were working together on Liv and Maddie, and she remembered it, and it was like that moment, like, whoa, here we are now working together. Who would have imagined life just sort of works in mysterious ways.
It sure does. It sure does. Well, so you fall in love with theater as a 10-year-old.
I would say, yeah.
And then develop it quite seriously in high school. Eventually, you ended up getting a bachelor's?
Bachelor of Fine Arts. Nice. At UC Santa Barbara.
So you studied it in college, mm-hmm. majored in it. Mm-hmm. And then what?
Well, it was nice because when I graduated, I had this credit, you know, with Saved by the Bell. And for me, it was this, you know, let's sort of look through the Rolodex of relatives who have been in this town for a long time. And I, you know, got connected to a manager after about, I would say, it took about a year mm-hmm. of just kind of, you know, noodling around and taking some acting classes, which I highly recommend. And then I did a sort of an audition for this manager who was working at a company called Litke Gale Madden, and they were pretty good, pretty big at the time. And this woman took me in, and you know, she's like, "Have you ever done commercials or thought about commercials?" And I said, "No and no," and I started right away doing commercials. Which was just an amazing, really great way to stay in the game for me, and always have been a nice fallback to this day. So and then you know you put together a reel and you try to find an agent, which we did, and started doing guest stars, and you know, one thing leads to another. You get a pilot after so many years, and suddenly you're on a show.
Yeah, suddenly you're on a very popular show.
Yeah, yeah. Took a while, though. I mean, it wasn't... Yeah. You hear about, you know, these situations where people are kind of just, like, dropped into Hollywood, and then they're, like, you know, like, success, instant success. That just wasn't the way it was for me. And you know, I certainly don't begrudge anybody who has that kind of experience. I think it's great, but I wouldn't count on it. Yeah, I just wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, you can't count on it. And also, the vast majority of the time that you have these so-called overnight successes, when you dig a little bit, when you dig at all, you discover that there's not a lot of overnight going on there, really. Right. It's just that they came to people's attention
sure.
quickly. But behind the scenes, they'd been, you know, studying, maybe working, mm-hmm. auditioning for quite a long time in mm-hmm. many cases. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we all love the idea of the overnight success, but it's not the normal story. So, how important has training been for you then?
Well, it was very important in that, you know, I always wondered how to go about attacking an audition or even memorizing lines or, you know, sort of reining in all the possibilities. Training for me was a great way to get up in front of a group of my peers and feel comfortable with new sets of material which were thrown at me. And I studied under a guy named Robert Carnegie at Playhouse West, which specifically works with the Meisner technique, which really worked for me, which was just about staying present and staying as honest as you can possibly be. And for me, as opposed to say, you know, the method where you're like now this character all the time and you're walking around and people are, you know, like addressed, like Daniel Day-Lewis it worked for and Sean Penn worked for me, this was more, Meisner was more like playing, and that's, you know, they call it a play because you're playing, mm-hmm. playing, and I never wanted to lose the fun of it. And all of a sudden with method, with so heavy, deep unearthing, which certainly can be important and good, I felt like it was sucking a lot of the fun out for me. So, you know, you hear people say, well, I feel so lucky I'm able to do what I love and earn a living. Yeah, that was a way for me to keep a smile on my face. And the training in that particular arena was great because it was here in LA. It was after college. Studying in college was important because I wanted to graduate college. And there were a lot of things that I learned in college, I'll be honest, that that I didn't use. But that, you know, they sort of set up the buffet mm-hmm. in college. You know, it was like, let's study Commedia dell'arte, these you know, Italian you know, work with different masks and try your hand at physical art, moving through any given space, juggling, working with your voice, finding your register. And also, let's learn how a production is made. Let's work in the lighting booth. Let's work in the costume department. Let's go to stagecraft, and you know, all these things we had to do, which certainly paid dividends. I never, you know, was under the guise that I was going to become a carpenter or work, you know, in stage crew. But it was important for me because right away I understood that there were so many parts, you know, in cogs in this machine, and not to sort of take for granted the work that everybody had to do. And I'm sure there were times in over the course of my career where I was either tired or overworked or this or that, and you know, you can overlook very easily the effort that so many people are putting in to make this thing happen. But my time in college particularly kept me very aware of what I needed to do in terms of keeping myself active, keeping myself in shape, and paying attention to or being aware of all the different pieces that need to go into this machine to make it run.
I think that's really important because it's just not all about the actors.
No, despite what we may wish or think. It's very easy to get lost in that, get mired in that, because we're so... we're very well taken care of. We get our rooms, we get our you know, our own restrooms, hopefully. People are working on our wardrobe and putting makeup on us, trying to help us look great, this, that, the other thing, and it's very easy to forget. And I'm sure I've been, you know, I've fallen into that trap, and I don't look back fondly at those memories, but I think you grow from that. Hopefully you grow from that. And it's just, you're right, it's not about the actors. It's about, and certainly being a part of a team, we always would say, you know, we're a family, and we all knew we weren't a family. I mean, we played a family on TV, and we wanted to put together an effort that made it look like we were a family. And but there were so many people that were coming in and out, and it was nice to see and become friends with, you know, guys from the art department, Larry, who was feeding us, and you know, I mean, you were there.
Yeah. The incredible props department and everybody else.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's a true, true team effort to make any kind of a show, whether it's TV or film or theater.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any auditioning advice for actors?
Well, since I can't get arrested at the moment, I don't know that I would take my own advice, but I'll give it my best shot. You know,
you're a working actor, Ben.
Well, I was. I mean, I will be working again. I keep telling my girls that. You know, it's here's the thing. An audition truly is an opportunity. This is the way I look at it. It's an opportunity for me to get in front of people, which is what I love. I love entertaining people. Or I hope I'm entertaining people. And there's really nothing better than being in a room of people who are analyzing you and trying to figure out if you're the right guy. And just knowing that they're laughing or smiling or enjoying it, enjoying your performance. And to achieve that, you've really got to, you know, you got to do your homework, which is read the script if you get it. And if you don't, be very, very familiar with your character. Learn your lines. Just learn your lines. However it is that you do it, learn your lines. For me, how I learn my lines, and this is something that Meisner teaches, I write them all out. Every time I get an audition, I write out every single word I'm going to say. And usually I'll do it right before I go to sleep. Hopefully I'll get 2 days to study for an audition. But that's not always the case.
That's often not the case.
It's often not the case. But if I work on a, you know, I have an office in my house, so I've got my own space, which is great. I've got kids and then wife and 3 dogs, and, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, friends come over, and it can be a little nutso sometimes. But it's nice to have my own space. And I'll work in my office, but the last thing I'll do before I go to sleep is usually I'll write out every word. So that, and there is a proven... there's a study out somewhere. Someone just mentioned it to me recently, and I'm forgetting who it was. But if you If you work on memorization before you fall asleep, your brain will not stop working on it while you're sleeping. Which is like, why not?
That's so cool.
Capitalize on that? That's free work. I'm sleeping and my brain is working on those words. And I've gotten up like in the middle of the night to get a glass of water or whatever, and I'll be like going through the lines. I'm like, wait a minute, why is that happening right now? And I know them, and it's just this amazing thing that happens. So I would say give that a shot. Try really working on those words right before you go to sleep. Even if you've, you know, let's just say you get a day and you've had the afternoon to work on it, and you've got a parent or a brother or someone or sister, someone that you're working with, just before you go to sleep, really, really spend like a half hour just going over every word, every word, every word, every paragraph, every page. See what happens. Because what happens for me when I'm able to be off book, certainly I was guilty of dropping a line or two in rehearsal over the course of our show or any situation, but is that, you know, I'm freed up to sort of ingest all these other elements of this character. You know, look, I auditioned for a basketball coach and a father, one of which I already was, the other of which, look, I'm 6'4". You know, I love sports, so it was very easy for me to identify with the character I was playing, and I had a good feeling going into that audition, like, I kind of feel like I'm the guy. Besides the fact that I had already worked with Andy Fickman on the pilot for MTV, who was our director and executive producer, I felt very comfortable, and part of that was that the role was right for me. And sometimes the roles just are you just land into this pocket where it feels right. Sometimes it's a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, you're not going to be right for every role, guess what?
Right. And how do you go into an audition knowing that? It's very funny. I had a situation the other day. I auditioned for this thing, and I looked at my daughter, and I said, you know, I just don't think I'm this guy. And she looks at me, she's like, well, you're not going to get it then. And I almost, like, came apart at the seams. I was like, you're so right. And she has gone through lines with me. She has watched me study for hours. And she's like, how can you get a role if you don't think you're right for it? Now, this was a role that, like, you know, it just, there were physical pieces of this role that I knew that I wasn't there. I think he was like 20 years older than I am or whatever. And you know, just a whole bunch of other physical things that I wasn't. But I just looked at her and I said, you know what, honey? I said, you're right. How am I going to get a job if I don't see myself as this thing? Which leads to heartbreak. Because what happens is for me, is now every room I go into, I really try to put myself in the headspace that I'm the guy. So that when I leave and I don't get the part, which is, you know, 99% of the time.
For all actors.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's brutal. It's brutal because there's this emotional attachment you get to the character. Like, oh, it'd be so much fun to play that guy. You know, who is going through this thing that I discovered through just the audition that I got. And you just kind of have to learn through the course of getting told no over and over again that that's part of the deal.
It's like a masterclass in non-attachment.
Mm-hmm. But you're, you know, to go back to what my daughter Morgan was saying is, how do you get a role if you're not attached to this character somehow? Yeah. I don't know. She's right. I think she's right.
I do too.
So I had a great audition for this thing. I just felt so good about it. And, you know, my manager called and said, you did everything right. You were perfect. They kind of want to go with more of a Paul Rudd type. And it was like, okay, that's completely not who I am. And, you know, but look, I met another casting director, and I think I impressed another casting director. And I have to believe that somewhere down the line that's going to pay dividends.
And it does. I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned that you'd worked with Andy Fickman previously on the project. And that's a very common sort of Hollywood thread.
It's sure.
Like, sometimes you do something very small with somebody and it doesn't go anywhere, but you plant seeds for the future.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to see down the road, you know. We live on just off of Mulholland, which is this like super curvy road that separates the valley and the city. And that's sort of how I envision my road as an actor, is like there's like these crazy turns and you don't know whatever car is going to be coming your way. So you have to sort of brace for it and stay on your side. And that's like really how I envision my acting life, is that I just never know what's going to be around the corner. And if I stay and I continue to do my work and I continue to believe in myself, and, you know, something's going to pan out.
Yeah, you're going to get where you want to go.
I hope so.
Well, let's talk. You mentioned briefly about, you know, getting cast in Liv and Maddie. Let's talk about that process.
Sure.
How'd that happen?
That was so much fun. You know, it's funny. I remember my agent telling me a long time before that audition. He's like, "We're not going to do any Disney kid stuff," and I was like, "Okay." You know, that's, you know, I'll follow your lead. And, you know, I just think that he saw me as something a little bit different. You know, we're talking years ago. So I get this audition, you know, he emails me the sides for this thing and the script. And I read it and I called him back and I said, "Is this really a Disney show? This doesn't read like a Disney show. This is like hilarious and almost like would appeal to adults. Not that Disney isn't hilarious, but you know what I mean. This feels like it could be on NBC." He said, "Bingo, that's why I sent it to you. And I think you're perfect for it." So I went in, and, you know, one of the great things that happens for me, for the most part, is that the casting directors in town know who I am, know what I'm capable of, and trust me to not let them down in the room. And so when I went in, I read immediately for all of our producers, you know, who were really John and John Beck and Ron Hart. I don't know that Andy was there at that time. Maybe Betsy was there, Betsy Solinger, who was also an executive producer. And then we had our casting, and I think Judy Taylor was there. So it was one of those things where I was like, oh, okay. So they want to make a decision, you know, kind of soon kind of thing. And, you know, it's the every now and then you step to the plate, and the way I describe it is like if you've ever played baseball or t-ball or softball and you've hit it so cleanly that it doesn't even, you don't even feel it on your hands. There's no vibration. There's no rattle. It's just smooth. And that's the way it felt coming out of that room. And I said, "Well, I think you might want to get prepared to do a Disney pilot at the time."
It was a pilot at the time, yeah.
And sure enough, I had been given a test offer, and which is, you know, we'll design a contract for you, and if we can make, you know, all the numbers line up, we'd like to have you read for the head of the network and, you know, whoever else. So I went back in, and now Andy's in, and I read, I remember reading with Dove and Tenzing, and there were a couple other kids trying out for the part then of Sticky, was the name of the character, and that which became Joey. And it felt great. It just felt really, great again. And Andy was joking with me. Oh, and I think Adam Bonnet asked me if I did any impressions, and I did an impression of Will Ferrell's impression of Harry Carey, who was the great Cubs announcer, which I'll spare you from right now. But they seemed to really like it, and I drove away feeling very good about it. But as things go, and maybe as Disney things go, it took forever. It took, like, if there were 10 days, it took 9.5. And I auditioned for a role that I got that was shooting in Atlanta that would have taken me away from this opportunity.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I really wanted to do this. It was an episodic. I forget the name of the show. It might have been Rizzoli and Isles. I'm not sure. Like a TNT show that, you know, there's a lot of stuff now that shoots in Atlanta and or all over the country even. And we kind of had to force the issue, which I was ready for.
Yeah.
I was ready to just kind of know.
Yeah, decide, man.
And,
come on,
you know, I remember my, you know, my, when your manager and your agent are, and your lawyer are on the phone together, or I think it was just my manager and agent, you kind of think, like, okay, this is like a for real call.
Something's happening.
Something's happening. And I was at my nephew's graduation from high school. And I was sitting next to my sister, and I got and I saw a call from my manager, and I said, I got to take this. I stepped outside. They said, well, we got good news and bad news. The bad news is you're not going to Atlanta. The good news is you got this pilot for Disney. So it was a great, I have chills, it was a great moment. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you look back on, and you're like, wow, why doesn't that happen all the time? And maybe the reason why it doesn't happen all the time is because then it wouldn't feel as great. I don't know. But sort of the rest is history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the little secrets about pilots is more of them don't go forward than do.
Sure.
So it's exciting to get a pilot, but you kind of, if you know enough about how that really goes, you still know, like, this may be all there is to it. This may not go forward past just the pilot, just the first episode.
Sure.
You know, because then there's that whole testing period. And with Disney, they took it down to the wire on the 6 months that they had. They had, I believe, as I recall, 6 months to get back to everybody.
It was right at the end of the year.
Yeah, we're green lighting. No, we're not. Right. And they took it down to the minute practically.
Right. And we didn't know what was going on. I think, Dove, maybe you had not. You didn't?
No,
So I remember running into, I was invited to something, and I went to the Disney building to get like tickets to some event or whatever. And I ran into John, one of our executive producers, John Beck at Creators. And I was like, what's going on, man? Are they like, and he's like, they don't know. Of course he knew that there was something else that was, you know, like that Liv and Maddie or something. We didn't have a name then, but that, you know, that there was maybe a twins thing happening. And I said, are you real? You're serious? You're telling me they don't know if they want to pick this up? And he was being honest. He said, no, they don't know. And sure enough, we got a call. It was literally
it was like December 23rd
or something. Yeah. It was like right up to the end, to the end of the year or the end of the working year. And yeah, and then it was like, okay, they're going to do a twins show. And we had to say goodbye to Cozy, which was hard, and now Dove is playing two roles, you know, twins, and here we go.
The entire storyline changed, but most of the original cast and creative team stayed in place.
So when we left shooting that pilot, I walked off that soundstage like 90%, this is going to be a show. I mean, it felt so good, everything was funny. I think what happened was the way that this particular show was set up was it was a little confusing. It was a blended family, you know, divorced parents coming together, remarrying, da 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 da. There's multiple kids, and they, you know, we're in a normal sitcom. We're shooting 16 or 17 scenes. This was like closer to 35 scenes. It felt like a sketch show, like SNL, and I think it was just a little bit too much for young kids to grasp onto, from what I heard.
Yeah,
which makes sense.
It was a different format. It was little vignettes, and I know the idea was it would be something like, you know, MTV, you know, not MTV,
right.
Sorry, it would be more like
SNL.
YouTube, sorry.
Or YouTube,
yeah,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Like little vignettes where you sort of hop from one to the next,
right.
And I think that people just, it seemed like such a cool idea,
mm-hmm.
but people just didn't get it. It didn't translate in testing.
Right. So, you know, that's why they do their testing, and mm-hmm. they're good at what they do, clearly. And I was really fortunate to be a part of this production moving forward.
Yeah.
I was glad to be asked to play the dad again. It was really fun.
It was an amazing run.
Yeah.
It was a very special experience.
It really
for
was.
Everybody.
It really was.
What has surprised you about this whole adventure of being an actor?
In terms of my life as an actor, what surprised me?
Yeah.
Well, for starters, that I never have ever gotten used to not working. And not working is a majority of the time, you know, and it eats at you a little bit or a lot. And so for me, it's nice to have other things going always. So when I don't have an audition or I don't have a work gig, I seem to be lately writing a lot, which is great, and I have have a writing partner now, and this kind of, I've always been able to write, and I've kept journals over the years and over various times of my life, but you know, this is just an example of trying to occupy that portion of my brain that needs to feel like there's some sort of expression happening.
Yeah, creative, you know? And productive.
Yeah, and certainly feeling productive is, it's hard. It was hard when I was, you know, fresh out of school, and all my friends, you know, were starting to get, you know, their jobs that weren't interns anymore. They were, you know, they were making a living, and I was like, okay, what am I doing? And then I got a commercial, and then you know, everything changes. It's in a matter of a second if you get a phone call. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, I'm working. It's great. So I've never really gotten used to those days or weeks or months or years where it's slow, and that continues to this day. Also, I'm amazed at how much I have to learn. Still, you know, I had never, like, this is a perfect example. I had never worked with kids before. I had never worked on a show where it was, you know, kids. And other than my playing a 19-year-old with other 19-year-olds.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, so it's amazing, but I made mistakes. And there are things that I will never forget, and but it's part of the process. You know, kids, you want to take care of children, and this industry has a very soft touch now, I think. They've been able to achieve with children. And it's important because I'm sure back in the day, whatever that day was, kids were overworked. Kids were not given, guidance. There wasn't an example that there wasn't a professional on set who was looking after their well-being all the time. And, you know, it took being on a show with children to understand how important it is that you give kids an environment with which they can feel comfortable making mistakes and growing up and being kids. Some kids will, test you emotionally. They'll be in a bad mood or whatever. Maybe they have an overbearing stage parent or whatever. And these are things that you sort of come to learn as, you know, episodes pile up in the rearview mirror and you're gaining this experience. So
that's really cool. This is fun. I love having your perspective because a 25-year-old isn't going to share that kind of information.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
right.
It was certainly my experience. It was, that's an example. I had the opportunity to direct, and I know that there were times where I was maybe like saying things to kids that I would say to my kids, you know, like, and you can't just say everything that comes to your mind to a kid. And I was like, hey, Ben, back it up a little bit. I was like, oh, right. Of course.
Yeah. No, it's an acquired extra skill set.
Sure. It really is. And it caught me off guard. And back to your original question, I do feel like still, there will always be things that I will learn about this business, for better or worse.
But that's a beautiful thing to know. I think it's the people who don't understand that who can get into trouble. What do you think is important and not important for success in this business?
I think it's important to have a really good understanding of what your capabilities are if you're going to succeed here in television and film. And I think it's also important to have a real love of entertaining. I think that there are people who come to town, come to LA, who want to be famous. And you know what? A few of them probably will be. And it's one of those things that's like, really? Why that? How did that happen? But I think if you're going to put yourself in position to succeed, you have to have some kind of real connection with the art of entertaining, which is understanding where beats are in the script, where to pause, where to punch it up, how to listen to directors, how to communicate with your actors, how to share struggles, how to, you know, it's this whole effort. It's not just, you know, I get kids reach out to me and, hey, I want to be on Liv and Maddie, you know, like, how can I get on your show? And it's, you know, I can't respond to everyone, but, you know, I would say in a general sense, you know, find your theater department in your high school and find out if you love theater, find out if you really like being on stage, because if you don't, then what are you doing? And if you really want to be famous, become a famous lawyer.
Yeah, be famous.
Become a famous, you know, cure cancers, yeah. and put your efforts to other directions.
Well, and where your fame isn't based on other people's decisions about what you do and don't get to do, because to be an actor, it's like there's a lot of permission. You know, where sure. It's like, okay, am I going to get the role or not? You know, and now you can say, well, with all the new platforms and stuff now, well, you can make your own show on YouTube. Well, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can. And there have been some incredible examples of people who've, you know, created their own thing and then been given their own shows on
sure.
a much bigger platform. Yay. You know, more power to everybody
Absolutely.
Who wants to create their own thing. I'm personally in love with all of that. But to be a sort of down the middle normal actor, as we think of actors, it's like mm-hmm. you got to audition, someone's got to say yes. You know, if you're counting on all of those things falling into place that are outside of your control,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of it's in your control, but a lot of it isn't. That's a hard way to get famous if famous
sure.
is what you're after.
If famous is what you're after, don't do this.
Don't do this.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just don't. If you really like watching old movies and or new movies, or you're really drawn to story and you find that you're able to access your emotions and you're comfortable in front of people, then maybe this is for you. And I would say find a class. I think that was for me right away the best thing that I had was the second class I had tried. Playhouse West, Robert Carnegie, they're on Lancashire, they're great, they teach Meisner. I'm not sure if they work with kids, but certainly young adults. And for me, that was essential. It was essential. And I also felt like I was productive.
I love hearing you mention that, because I've talked to a number of young actors who seem to feel like if they go to college and they get their BFA or whatever, that they're done. And they're good,
mm-hmm.
and they should be able to come to LA or whatever and start to just work
mm-hmm.
without taking any further classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes against everything that everybody in the industry has ever said to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, no, you got to keep taking classes, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like playing baseball. You imagine, you know, sir, the season's going to end in October and then pick back up in February, but if you're not playing catch or staying loose or going to the gym, you're going to show up out of shape and other people are going to pass you by. So if you're not getting auditions and if you're not in a class or not on a show, then you're sort of stagnant. And look, I've felt stagnant for certain periods of time, and then an audition or two will come along and it feels like I'm getting loose again. But if you're sitting around waiting for something to happen, it's not going to happen. You have to, nothing comes of nothing. And I think for me also at that age, I was able to make, you know, form a little community of fellow actors. And I had friends and we would hang out. And I had my friends from college and that we were all from LA, remarkably. And we're still friends to this day. But I didn't really have like an acting community, but I was able to access, oh, what did you just audition for, and how did you get that, and oh, okay, and who's a casting director, and oh yeah, who's your agent, oh, there's a showcase, and what is that, and so there's all sorts of things that you can learn from your peers, and I think that's also an important thing to hang on to when you're you know, just in town and trying to make your mark.
I agree completely, and I see that with a lot of the young actors that I know, and their peer groups are part of what helps them find work, you know, because I know a lot of young actors who will hear about an audition and they think, oh, my friend would be perfect for that. And somehow it hasn't been on their agent's radar or whatever. And they get them in and they get the role, and or they hire each other for stuff sometimes. And that networking, it's not a mysterious abstract thing. It's about being in relationship with people who want to help each other.
Sure.
You know, and it's really important. And I like that you mentioned that if you're auditioning regularly, that's another way to sort of stay loose and in shape. Because it's true. Like, if you're fortunate enough to have a lot of regular auditions, you know, maybe you don't have to take classes all the time in between. I think the point
is, if the feedback's good,
exactly.
You know, unless you're hearing, boy, you're missing on these, and we're hearing that you're not able to do what you were able to do 6 months or a year ago, then that's, like, got to be your big signal, like, okay, take a dip back into the acting class.
Yeah, and there's no shame or, like...
No.
Weirdness about that. It's just, like, it's like staying in shape.
Yeah, I did it a year ago. I went for about 4 months, and I loved it. It was great.
Well, plus it's fun.
Yeah.
It ought to be fun.
It ought to be.
Fun is good. Well, so speaking of all these, you know, the life of an actor in reality, which is just nothing but auditions and, you know, 99% no, how do you handle rejection? What's your way of holding that or dealing with it?
For me, it's about redirect. If, you know, look, some auditions are really harder to shake than others. Things that you really feel like you're right for and you really feel like you know, you're connected to and you want more. It's hard. It's not there. I don't have a formula for it other than, for me, it's, you know, go to school and pick up my kids and hear about their day and spend time with, you know, my wife and or look forward to the next vacation or whatever it is. You know, step out of that sort of chamber of pain, because it is painful to not get every single job that I go up for. I had a commercial call back yesterday, and, you know, it was this great thing. It's really funny, great director. And, you know, I'm still waiting for my phone to ring. And it's really nice to be able to come here and do this and take my mind away from it. And it's that, you know, I'm not going to say just a commercial, but yeah, it's just a commercial. It's not something that's going to last for the rest of my life or for the next year or two or whatever. But, I think it's important. It's like, you know, when you have kids, you know, that if they're into something that isn't good, you just kind of have to point them in another direction and then watch them toddle off and find something that is better for them. And if you're on the couch brooding, which we've all done as actors, about some horrible, horrible, you know, job that you missed and the horrible feeling, then, you know, you need to get up and go to the gym or get the endorphins going or, you know, or just step outside or do something to just kind of change the pH a little bit, pH balance.
I like that. If you weren't an actor, what would you do?
That's a great question. I would probably be a teacher. I really do enjoy that sort of direct connection that acting gives me, where I see the effect that my performance has instantly. It doesn't matter if it's on stage or on a sound stage. There are people working the cameras. There are people, directors or producers sitting in chairs that react. And I've really become... And I think the cat agrees too.
Fern's making her cameo.
Yes.
Hey, Fern.
I've really come to feel comfortable in front of people and knowing that I think I'd be a pretty good teacher, and I think I'd enjoy it, and I think I'd enjoy having my summers off too.
That's a good Actually, I think a lot of actors and teachers, like, there's a lot of sort of crossover.
Well, there's presentational aspects of teaching that, you know, you have to be comfortable in front of people, I would say, and you have to have a way, you know, a way about you that's comfortable, and you can communicate and you can connect, and so yeah, maybe that
sounds like fun. Any advice for young people who want this life?
I think I mentioned it earlier. I think, you know, find your theater departments in your schools and take classes and do it because you like, because you're attracted to the art. I think there's this great pitfall of wanting to be famous that just ruins people, and it gets people thinking about things that don't matter. Whereas if you're in it because you just don't see yourself doing anything else and you love it, then you know. So if you're young and if you're thinking about a career in this business or you want to give it a shot, start off with a local theater production of something and see if it's something that suits you. And if it does, try it again. And then after a couple, three, however many productions, see who you know in LA. See if you can rent an apartment for a pilot season. See if you can get into a showcase out here and get in front of agents. Be seen.
And be seen. That is good advice. Anything else you'd like to share?
Thank you for having me. This was a pleasure. And it was great. I really enjoyed it.
How can people find you, Ben?
My Twitter is Sir Benjamin King, SirBenjamin King. And Instagram is SirBenjamin213. And I have a Facebook page, Benjamin King.
Is it Sir Benjamin King or Benjamin King?
My Facebook page is Benjamin King.
Is it? Okay, cool.
Yes.
Thank you. I will fix that in the show notes.
No problem.
Those are all verified accounts, so you know it's really him when you find it.
Yes.
Ben, thank you for coming and talking to us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. Or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to hollywoodparentsguide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.